Preston and Steve Fun Size.
Our next guest is an accomplished writer and director. A couple little things you may have heard of before, like Loopers and Star Wars Episode 8, The Last Jedi.
Yeah.
You want me to play his case? There you go. Need a fanfare when we bring somebody on board.
Jesus.
But he is here to promote the film Knives Out, which is star-studded, looks really, really cool. Please welcome writer and director Ryan Johnson.
Yeah! Thank you.
Hey, Ryan, how are you?
I'm doing great, President. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, man. We're excited about this.
Tremendously.
We're fans of the murder mystery, the whodunits and all that, and you just don't see them that often.
This style, in the vein of Agatha Christie and in the vein of 12 Little Indians, Murder on the Orient Express, the Hitchcock, that sort of stuff. And when they're done well, there's nothing like them. They just totally bring you in.
Yeah, one of my favorite genres, man. Like, I grew up reading Agatha Christie's books. I grew up
reading
the movies based on them. And it's so much, everybody loves a good murder mystery, a good whodunit, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. And it also is one of the few that allows for great ensemble work.
Yes. Yeah. You got a rogues gallery of suspects.
Yeah.
The idea with this movie was, let's do a star-studded cast. It's kind of like old school like that. Let's have it be so everyone that pops up on screen, you're like, oh, it's that person.
Yeah,
oh,
let me rattle off the names, okay, for those who may not be familiar. Christopher Plummer, Daniel Craig, Chris Evans, Jamie Lee Curtis, Michael Shannon, Toni Collette, Don Johnson, who's been doing some great stuff.
The Watchmen.
Yeah.
Frank Oz, even.
Yeah, that's Frank in there.
Awesome. Christopher Plummer.
The
great Christopher Plummer.
The legend, yeah.
And it's exactly... Also, you get a chance to, with a cast like that, and Jamie Lee Curtis, I remember when I first saw the original Murder on the Orient Express, and that actually got me reading Agatha Christie. You can high-concept characters a little bit. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. They're just on the verge of caricature. That's the thing with this. It's a fun movie, and the cast, all of these stars, they just showed up ready to play.
They're having a blast. Yeah. I love Daniel Craig. And Chris Evans looks to be...
He's playing a jerk.
He's playing a real jerk. And savoring. Everyone seems to say Michael Shannon is super intense, and yet he gets to...
He's having fun. Daniel Craig, if you just know him from the Bond movies, you would think he's a really serious, intense guy. He is so much fun in real life. He's like a blast. And he's having a ball in this movie.
So what's it like? I would imagine you have scenes where everybody's in it at the same time.
Those were my favorite ones.
What's that got to be like? Where in between takes where these people are just kind of, it's got to be fun.
It was a party, man. Yeah. And also, we shot in a house in Massachusetts. It's like in a murder mystery mansion. But we're in a real house. And so everyone liked each other, and in between takes, people wouldn't go back to their trailers and get on their cell phones. They would all go down in the basement of this house, around the pool table, and hang out.
Exactly what you want.
It was like summer camp for movie stars. It was great. It was really fun. So, I think you can see on screen how much fun everyone's having.
The conceit is a celebrated writer, 85 years old, I guess. He's having a birthday. The family's a little disenfranchised. He wants to bring them together, reunite them, and in classic fashion, he ends up dead.
Yep.
And and then you have your but all the tropes that should be there are there, you know?
Yeah. In a lot of ways, it's very traditional. Yeah, exactly. But then it also throws some curveballs at you. And the big thing it does, a lot of times when you see Agatha Christie adaptations, I love them dearly, but they're period pieces.
Yeah.
This is set today. It's modern.
I love that.
And all the characters are modern types. And so it's very much updated for 2019.
And you're inherently, you have a good sense of humor, and you see it permeate all your work. And I think a lot of times people forget that the original Agatha Christie stuff and the original Hitchcock always had a sense of humor.
Oh, yeah.
I remember there's a scene in Frenzy, the movie Frenzy, where they're sitting having a meal, and the meal is supposed to be analogous to the – and it's just funny. And all that stuff works, and that makes it even more, to see –
Absolutely. Well, and Poirot, Christie's Detective Poirot. When Peter Ustinov, he's my favorite Poirot.
I think you're right.
Back in the day, and he got the clownishness of him.
I think Albert Finney was a little hard to understand.
I love him. He's going all out, man. I think Branagh's Poirot is terrific.
Yeah.
Ustinov was, and David Suchet is terrific. Ustinov is my favorite, though.
Yeah,
and
there's
something funny about they're having fun with these characters.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Steve had mentioned a movie the other day that I loved, and I run into very few people who remember it, but was Murder by Death. Do you remember?
Oh, God. Yeah, of course.
Such
a
hilarious movie. Now it's a little more slapstick, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Neil Simon wrote it. It's like, it's more like Clue. It's more like a parody.
Right. And he was a fan. He was a fan of that. So, one of your works, which I love, is Brick, which is, everyone always says a Dashiell Hammett sort of vibe to it with the sharp dialogue and everything. I mean, this is great stuff that doesn't get exercised a lot.
Yeah, it's fun to go back. I mean, I don't know. These are genres that I grew up just like loving, you know. And so the idea is to get the essential pleasure of what everyone loves about them. But then, you know, hopefully throw some stuff at you that you haven't seen in them before, too. So it feels a little, you know, feels like you are also on a ride and you're not quite sure what's going to happen next.
And the story written by you?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So this is a completely original?
Yeah, this is an original whodunit, yeah.
Okay, so... Do you start at the end and work your way back?
I start way zoomed back. I start just thinking about the shape of the whole thing.
Okay.
But I need to have that. I need to have the whole thing. I couldn't start writing at the beginning and find my way through.
Right.
I need to have the whole shape in my head before I sit down.
I think you would have to. Yeah. And there's a certain – the people who have done it the best, I think, approach it that way.
Yeah.
Because you know, it allows you to keep tagging things on, you know?
Yeah, and see
and MacGuffins and all that.
Well, when you get to the end of a good murder mystery, you know, and you have the scene, one of my favorite types of scenes in all of fiction where the detective lays the whole thing out,
yes,
like in the library.
Yeah. Yes,
which we have a really good one of those. It's like, and with that, you have to have laid the groundwork because it's only satisfying if you feel like, oh yeah, that thing. Oh, if you recognize each of them and it's paying something off.
Did you have someone fact check and make sure that you know what you did was legitimate?
You know who was the best at that on set? Chris Evans. He would bust my balls, and you come up between every take and like, I was just noticed this, and then every time my heart would clench up because I was like, oh no, he caught me, and then I realized, oh no, it's because of this, and I would explain to
all
him,
right,
say, yeah,
okay.
I got away with it.
That's a sign of a good mystery because wait a minute, no, you know what I mean?
I love it, and the critical response has been sensational.
Yeah,
and that's got to make you feel good when you invest time in something you love. Not that it's everything.
Yeah,
but it's something.
You know, I'll tell you, the bigger thing is this is like a movie to be seen with an audience. And the audience it's been playing really well. It's been, you know, it gets big laughs and then people are enjoying it. That to me is what's fun. Well, so I'm psyched to show it tonight.
You know? Allow me to quote The Hollywood Reporter, which says, an ingeniously plotted, tremendously entertaining, and deviously irreverent crowd pleaser.
Well, that's it, yeah.
That's what you want.
So it is playing tonight at the Philadelphia Film Festival. Do you know if there's any tickets available?
You know, I don't know. I think I just saw a tweet that they had like released a few more, so you might want to check their website and see.
Yeah, it's Philadelphia.org.
Opening for Thanksgiving.
If
you can't get, and that's those they wheel out the what they believe to be the heavy hitters.
Yeah,
you know, for that. And so obviously, relatively speaking, you're a younger filmmaker. You know,
God bless you, sir.
with the body of work, but. You know, so obviously we're going to talk about the stuff and the Star Wars, universe that you're now in. And now you have your own trilogy that you're responsible for that has been in this. If I'm not correct, tell me so I can start weeping. But I think you have this potential, this new universe that you can create from the ground up that's in the same environment, but removed.
Yeah. That's what's really exciting moving forward because they've said with episode 9 that JJ is doing right now, which I'm so excited for. I cannot wait.
It looks phenomenal.
Oh, God, that trailer just knocked me out. So, I mean, that's going to be, they've said over and over, this is going to be the end of kind of this era of the movies.
And I think it's time. Honestly, I love the second trilogy, the Lucas trilogy, certainly there are issues. Perhaps you've heard some of the buzz about what fans think. I think I commend you for taking on something like that because you're damned if you do and damned if you don't.
I love the fans so much. I am a fan. That's a thing. I grew up as a Star Wars fan. And so all of the passion for it. I was in my 20s when the prequels came out. So both sides of the passion for Star Wars I've been plugged into always. And that's what's great about it. You know?
I commend you for agreeing to do it. Like, because you're such a fan, you're like, was there ever a thought of like, no, I can't do this?
No, I don't. I mean, it's just something that's so deep. I know everyone is a Star Wars fan who like when those first movies came out, if you're like my age, like you saw them when you were like 5 and 6. It's so deep in your bones. It's something you love so dearly. And also the people who make these movies and the producers and everything and the talent, they're just the best people on the planet, and everyone is just working from such a pure place of love for what this thing is, you know. And so, no, man, I couldn't, you know.
You had to let that purity guide. You know, at least you could have control over it.
It's the only thing you can do. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's just follow kind of, you know, what you want to do.
So I want to ask you about ownership of movies, because people take the Star Wars universe very seriously. And I'm a Star Wars nerd through and through. Yeah. But people also confuse opinions and facts all the time. and it bothers me, because if you have an opinion on a movie, that's not necessarily a fact about that movie. But people state them as if they are.
Yeah.
And I loved Last Jedi. Oh, there are so many layers to it that I think people are misunderstood, or they walked out of the theater with an opinion, and it's fine for them to have their opinion too. Mm. But what's your take on blowback or criticism or whatever? Does it bother you? Does it stick with you, or how do you interpret it?
Well, like I said, I got to come at it from, again, the perspective of being a Star Wars fan my whole life, and realizing that the passion for it's there are two sides to that. You know, the passion's going to land one way for some, and if you don't like something, that passion's going to apply back the other way, and there's no use. There's no, you know, you can't have one without the other, I guess. You know, people feel strongly about this stuff because they care about it so deeply. And people are going to respond to different things. Every fan is looking for something slightly different from a Star Wars movie. There's nothing that's going to stand
out. That's the general. I was in the theater on opening night for the original Star Wars because I'm an old bastard. and I read the paperback book that was before the movie came out, had scenes that were not even shot for the movie.
Sure.
It's from Lucas's screenplay.
Yeah.
And the movie was always intended to be a fun homage to the movie serials.
Yeah, it's Buck Rogers.
And that's it.
Yeah,
and it was supposed to be loving and fun.
Yeah.
But then as its own myth almost started to weigh it down, and people lost sight of, just go have a good time.
Well, also, but the thing is, though, I feel like there is always an element, because it was that. But then, you know, with Empire, it dug a little bit deeper into the mythic stuff. That was a fish hook that like got us all. You know, Empire really shook it up from A New Hope in every single way. I mean, not just the big I am your father twist, but tonally, and also in terms of how deep it went, in terms of digging into that kind of deeper mythological stuff, you know, the psychological stuff. So
classic second act.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Absolutely.
It doesn't
100%.
End happy.
And and really turns everything up onto its head, and then in a way that can be really satisfyingly resolved in the third one.
Yeah.
You see where I'm going with this.
Yes. Well, you did some things in this movie that we hadn't seen in any of the previous seven movies, I should say.
Yeah.
And one of them was using light speed as a weapon.
Yeah. The first time they talk about light speed, what's the context they're talking about? And they're talking about, you got to do your calculations right.
Yeah.
Or you'll run into something, and then it'll be a big mess.
But the blowback on that, and you know, fans were like,
I never quite understood that, because the thing is, that was the context that it was introduced in. So it physically can't happen. So the only argument I've really heard is, we don't want to think about the fact that it can happen, because that complicates how we have to think about war in this world.
You would have to make calculations, and you had like shields and things exactly for that. But I mean, it's your toy. You'd run with it.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah. Yeah, no,
it's
yeah,
like
know.
Because no. What, so the 8-foot talking carpet, that's real.
Yeah.
Relax.
It has to make sense within the context of the world.
And
but I feel like, you know, that I can stand behind. You know,
no, it was a mother effer of a scene.
Yeah, that scene. Yeah, come on.
The effects and all that, it was great.
If you're just tuning in, it's Rian Johnson, who's here, writer and director. Knives Out is in theaters November 27th. There is a screening tonight, by the way. You can go to Filmadelphia.org for the information. Get tickets. It's at 6:45, part of the Philadelphia Film Festival. Speaking of fans, real quick, and I know you guys all have questions. Everybody's got their hands raised here. But now, I haven't gone back and watched The Last Jedi in a little while. But is that, I think fans had a bunch of fun with the fight scene where Kylo and Rey, you know what I'm talking about? They used the different pieces of music.
Mm.
Did you happen to see those?
Yeah, that was really fun. Everyone started remixing it to different songs.
Oh, yeah. Aaron Nick Murphy, who I introduced you to.
Yeah.
He did a whole.
He did like a dozen of them.
He did a whole album.
I've
some funny ones and some other ones that, like, you know, tonally absolutely made sense.
I love it.
I think he might even use Firework from Katy Perry.
Yeah, that's great. That's great.
Awesome. I totally see that.
Yeah,
yeah, that's a blast, man.
You gotta love that fans are having.
Well, that's
fun
what I mean. They take it and they make it their own. Whether it's that or fan fiction or fan art, or, you know, people just take this stuff so personally. That's what's great about it. You know,
in A New Hope. Luke meets Leia via a hologram. And in The Last Jedi, Luke says goodbye to Leia via a hologram. Was that your idea?
Yeah. Yeah, man. You got, I mean, the symmetry, you know, you're always looking for symmetry. Wow. If you can hit that sweet spot with symmetry so that even if you don't, you know, the first time you watch a movie, you aren't thinking of it in those terms. When you step back and take a look at the whole thing laid out, you're like, oh, this rhymes with this and this, it bookends this. Especially with something like the like Star Wars, you're always searching for those, you know, those things to lay in there.
Thank you for answering questions about a movie, because I know you're here to talk about Knives Out, and I can't wait to see that movie as well. But I well, we have a director of one of the Star Wars movies
in
the studio.
About Star Wars.
We lavish love on Knives Out as well. But I also have to ask you, as a Looper is an amazing film, and it also speaks to your ability to add. Remember watching that and go, well, this is a really cool conceit. I'm thinking of like has a Harlan Ellison, Philip K. Dick sort of vibe to it. It's cool. It's jumping around. And then it gets you emotionally, too. And, you know, when you're and that's something that I think when you can do that in all this stuff where you, you know, you can go down one path and phone it in. And then it becomes something where it just it gets you, you know, viscerally with the kid and what his future will be and how things have to be right. That to me was just such an amazing end. I don't want to give it away if you've never seen it. You need to see Looper if you've never seen it. But working with Bruce Willis and working with Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who you worked with in Brick as well, you know, you start to build an ensemble of people you go to, you know, there are people that are comfortable. Who do you consider your go-to, you know, people now?
Well, I haven't worked with him for a few movies, but Joe Gordon-Levitt is one of my good friends.
Awesome,
and he's so good, man. Yeah. He's such a good person, you know. He's such a lovely, wonderful guy. And I managed even – this is The Last Jedi. He wasn't – we got him in there as a voice, alien voice.
Okay,
Knives Out, we had to get him in there as a voice, too.
Oh, that's great.
Because he wasn't available. So you keep your ears peeled. He's in there. So right.
You guys are friends.
Yeah, we're buddies.
Okay, because he's in a scene of a movie. It's one of my favorite theatrical scenes ever, and it's a movie called 500 Days of Summer.
Oh yeah,
and it's when the Hall & Oates song comes on. I, you know, to me, I just and there's a Han Solo thing in it as well.
Yeah, yeah.
But I would love to meet that guy. He is a good friend
of
yours.
He's a sweetheart, man. He is so cool.
Tell him that I love him.
Let's call him right now. Let's get him on speaker.
Sure. Whenever I hear that song, I bounce around like he does when he's walking down the street. Like I want to do what he did in that movie.
We made the very first movie I made was called Brick. It was like a weird like high school noir, and he was in it
twice today. I haven't seen it.
Oh well. Oh,
yeah, did you shoot that at the high school you went to?
I did. Yeah, yeah. I shot at San Clemente High School down in Orange County.
That's wild.
Yeah, yeah.
It's got to be cool to come back with a film crew to the school that you.
It was cool, but we were really low budget. We were like micro budget with that movie.
Still.
So I think we were more annoying to them. I'm surprised that they didn't kick us out before we were done filming.
Well, Knives Out honestly is I cannot wait to see it. It looks phenomenal, and so I assume, have you done the full premiere route yet, or is where this is one cog in the premiere?
Well, Philly is not a cog.
I know.
This is the main engine of the whole tour.
Thank you for saying that.
We premiered at Toronto, and I just came from the Chicago Film Festival, and we're here tonight, and I'm psyched to see it with every. Like I said, man, this is a crowd movie. This is a crowd-pleasing movie. It's so much fun to be in the theater when a big crowd is watching this.
Love it.
Can I ask what the title refers to, or is it a plot point that we need to wait for?
No,
or?
I mean, sort of. There are knives in it, but it's the Radiohead song is what I kind of stuck it in my head years ago. You know, Amnesiac, I think it's on, Knives Out.
Okay.
And so that phrase just always seemed like a cool turn of phrase to me. It seemed like a good murder mystery.
It always indicates.
And the knives are out.
Your knives are out. Somebody's got it. Yeah.
Which definitely applies to the family in this movie.
Awesome.
Yeah,
yeah. Can I jump in real quick? I just want to ask you, because I know that you do have your fingerprint on the Breaking Bad universe. Mm-hmm. And you directed a couple of episodes of the final season.
Yeah.
I watched El Camino, and then I was like, oh, God, I got to go back and watch the final two seasons. So I did that, and then I watched El Camino again. So you directed Ozymandias.
Yeah.
And I got to ask, is that the episode where Walt calls Skyler and has the phone conversation with her?
Yeah.
That is like some of the finest acting I've ever witnessed in my entire life, because he is saying things to her. But he's also on like, so what you're hearing through the phone is what he's saying, but emotionally he's not saying those words. And like, so Can you explain that better than what I
mean,
just said?
No, you put it just beautifully, man. Okay. And Cranston, I mean, that's the explanation. It's one word. It's Cranston. That dude is just
Cranston.
So you didn't have anything to do with that?
No, man. No, honestly, you show up and you do your work as a director, which is on set to be an audience for the actor, you know. And so you watch it. If you feel something, you say it to them. If you feel, you know, try this, try that. The truth is, though, especially at Breaking Bad, I mean, the writing is so good. You know, those actors, as a director, it makes your job so easy. You have to show up on set and just, like, roll with it and try and maximize it. You know?
Real quick, how many takes for that particular scene?
I don't know. I think it was freezing that night. Okay. So probably, I don't think many. I think it was maybe three or four. And then Anna Gunn, you know, Skylar's side of the call. It's interesting because, you know, I remember with Yoda, you know, with Mark Hamill and Frank Oz.
Yeah.
Frank telling me, you know, everyone talks about the expressiveness of the puppet and the performance of Yoda, and he said 90% of it is Mark believing, you know, listening.
Yeah, yeah, and I can believe that, yeah.
And, yeah, it's a weird analogy, but what Anna is doing on the other side, the amount of that call where we're on her face and hearing her realize what her husband is doing, mm-hmm. that's as much of the scene as...
Okay, and for that, was she in the next room? Was she actually on the phone with him while he was doing it? Or were you doing a playback?
No, we had him there. So he was... Obviously, we shot them completely separately. But then we have both... And vice versa. She was on set, kind of on the phone with him there for his side of it. And then we were in the house shooting. It was a totally different day, but he was there for her side of it. So they were both there for each other.
Okay.
That's wild stuff.
That's great.
Wild.
All right. Well, a reminder, Knives Out, screening of it in Philadelphia. It is tonight, 6:45, and you can get all the information at filmadelphia.org. It's part of the Philadelphia Film Festival. And then it will be in theaters on November 27th. But I also did read there's some early access screening here in Philadelphia on the 22nd and 23rd. And that you can get at knivesout.movie. Or tickets.knivesout.movie. So you can search around and find an early way to get to see it.
And by the way, you should probably put some ointment on those fanboy burns you just got.
Yeah. Those could get infected.
That's all right. I'm scabbed over. It's all right. I got the scabs.
All right. Thank you very much, Ryan Johnson.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for coming by. Appreciate it. And with that, we are going to take a quick break. Coming back.
Get the whole Preston and Steve Show or the Bizarre Files podcast at PrestonandSteve.com.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.